Whether you're quarantined in the house or not, you still don't want your gym bag being all nasty. Our sponsor today, Manscaped, is here to make sure your stuff stays in check. Manscaped promotes clean hygiene when it comes to your junk thanks to their Lawnmower 3.0. Manscaped is the only men's brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming. While you're probably at home looking for something to do, why not make manscaping a part of your new routine? You don't want to look like you're sitting on men's shoulders from WCW. And you don't want Brutus the Barber Beefcake chomping away down there. And you dang sure don't want to use that Freebird hair removal cream. Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0. Precision engineered tools for your family jewels. The Perfect Package 3.0 kit comes with new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, waterproof, cordless body trimmer, and a ton of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. This third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. Your goods are going to be nick free thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin safe technology. Inside the Perfect Package, you'll also find the Manscaped Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing deodorant and moisturizer. You're probably sitting on the couch like Al Bundy right now anyway, so you might as well keep everything smooth and fresh. Subscribe to the Perfect Package to get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months, making sure your trimmer stays fresh and clean. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts: the Shed Travel Bag, $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. This is the perfect package for your perfect package. Get 20% off and free shipping with code SLOPDROP at manscaped.com. That's SLOPDROP, SLOPDROP. Do yourself a favor and always use the right tools for the job. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com by using the promo code SLOPDROP, SLOPDROP.
That's a slop drop. I can answer that. That's a slop drop. What is that move? That's a slop drop.
Slop drop time. That's a slop drop. Oh, that is a slop drop.
Slop drop, slop drop.
A slop drop.
The slop drop indeed.
What's up, wrestling fans? Welcome back to the Slop Drop. This is Nathan Rogers at Rupik Sumo on Twitter, and we are joined by my tag team partner for this episode, the voice of the Twin Lakes Sports Network, the loose cannon, David McBee.
Man, I'm coming today on today's show from an undisclosed location. Nobody knows where I'm at because I'm planning for a huge week at the Twin Lakes Sports Network. We got a big graduation that we're doing tomorrow night. We can't do any sports right now, so what we're doing is we're doing graduation tomorrow night. Yellville Summit, check it out on the Twin Lakes Sports Network. All those great kids, we're going to make sure that they have a pretty good show.
This episode, we're going to be talking about WCW Monday Nitro, July 29th, 1996.
WCW Monday Nitro ignites once again as we come to you live for two solid hours of the best in professional wrestling, live from the Disney MGM Studios in Orlando, Florida. As always, a capacity crowd for the 2 hours that have set the standard in our sport. Hi, everyone, along with the living legend, Larry Zbyszko. I am Tony Schiavone. In this two-hour program, two title matches, including the Giant defending the WCW World Heavyweight title against Arn Anderson of the Horsemen. Rey Mysterio Jr., the Cruiserweight Champion, will defend against Eddie Guerrero. In addition, a tag team match, the American Males, to go up against two men who hope to become World Tag Team Champions at Hog Wild. We are talking about the Steiner Brothers. That's later on in this two-hour telecast.
From the Disney MGM Studios in Orlando, Florida, only 450 people in attendance, and it was a free show. Commentators were Eric Bischoff, the living legend Larry Zbyszko, and your favorite, Schiavone, Tony Schiavone.
And this was a pivotal episode in the history of Monday Nitro, in my opinion. When you look at the initial card, you look at it, you're like, man, there's only like four matches, and some of the matches are not good. But this is when business really started to pick up, and a new era was born in the Monday Night Wars.
I agree. We talked a little bit earlier off the air, and you said it right. It was the phasing out of the cartoonish gimmick era and the start of the more realistic realism type stuff that we like. This was one of the most memorable episodes in WCW Nitro history.
To bring everyone up to speed, the current champions at the time, the world champion was the Giant, who we know as the Big Show. The U.S. champion was Ric Flair. Tag team champions were Harlem Heat. The TV champ was Lex Luger, and the Cruiserweight champion was Rey Mysterio. Again, this all happened in front of less than 500 fans. Originally, it was advertised that Rey Mysterio would defend the Cruiserweight title against Eddie Guerrero. The Steiners were supposed to wrestle the American Males, and Arn Anderson would face the Giant for the world title. But as we will see shortly, those matches would soon change.
Yeah, I mean, when you just named off some of the guys that was the champions and guys that were scheduled to compete, this was a card just full of Hall of Famers. And like you said, this was a card that went on to be, I remember watching this as an 18-year-old when it happened, and it just completely pulled me in. And I was addicted to Nitro for basically after that till the end of 97. But this is what really started to build up one of the biggest factions of all time that changed the game.
Also an interesting tidbit, according to Eric Bischoff on his podcast 83 Weeks with Conrad Thompson, had they not had this at Disney MGM Studios, this show probably would not have ever happened due to the 1996 Summer Olympics at the time. All the production trucks at TNT were taken. The TBS sports production was spoken for. The equipment was being used, all in Atlanta to cover the Olympics.
Thank goodness that I had already developed a relationship, you know, 2 years previously with Disney MGM Studios. Because had we not done that, I'm not really sure we would have had an episode on July 29th, 1996. You know, that was right around the time, you know, the Olympics in Atlanta were at their peak. Literally every single television production truck was spoken for by the Olympics. We couldn't get a television production truck to save our lives. So we had no staff, we had no production truck, and there were no venues that we could get in and out of. And let's not even think about what it was like to get, you know, airlines, you know, in and out of Atlanta or anywhere else in the Southeast at that time.
Well, and as you know, we were talking earlier off air about, you know, the relationship with WCW and Disney. You know, when Bischoff first became executive vice president for WCW in late 93 and then into 94, one of the first things he did as a cost-cutting move was start doing what they call the Disney tapings, where they would, instead of working all these house shows and all these, you know, on the road shows they were recording, to save money, they would just shoot, hey, let's shoot a whole month's worth of episodes of WCW Saturday Night in one afternoon as a cost saving move. So the relationship was really built up. And then I'd forgotten about the Olympics in 96, you know, coming to Atlanta. And that caused them to really have to change the game because, you know, they were drawing more than 450, so that number's a little deceiving. But, you know, they were kind of almost out of necessity, had to work out of the Disney area. But what's crazy, this episode almost ruined the relationship between WCW and Disney.
Tony Schiavone and the living legend Larry Zbysko, a WWE Hall of Famer, welcomes us to the show, and we get to hear Larry start using his phrase, New World Order, which he says about 3,000 times during this episode alone.
The New World Order.
Oh, that's all he would say for the next 2 years. But I love listening to the living legend. I think he brought a really good perspective. He would really explain different holds, how they could impact. I really enjoyed the combination of Zbysko and Schiavone. Not as much as I liked Bobby the Brain Heenan and Schiavone, but I thought I always enjoyed them being kind of that first hour of a two-hour show.
Yeah. First match of the night, Hacksaw Jim Duggan defeated Mike Enos by pinfall after a taped fist punch.
Hey, that's a foreign object there!
Oh, wait a minute. I don't know if it is or not.
What do you mean you don't know? He pulled it out of his tights!
One, two, three! Hacksaw Jim Duggan!
You know, tape is only legal when it's taped around the wrist or an ankle.
This was a basic brawl. The ref backs away Enos away. Duggan tapes up his fist, hammers Enos for the pin. Duggan, a WWE Hall of Famer. Enos was in a tag team at this time with Dick Slater called Rough and Ready. They were managed by Colonel Parker. Enos spent most of his career in tag teams and in the WWF with Wayne Bloom as the Beverly Brothers.
Well, my question on this match was, it's obvious right in front of the referee, he pulls out a wad of tape because he was doing this whole tape fist gimmick. And I really appreciated what Zbyszko was saying. Hey, that's a foreign object. He shouldn't just be able to tape his fist up and knock the guy out. I mean, that was the kind of things I really liked about Zbyszko. But, I mean, not a very good match. Poor Mike Enos. I think the thing he's most remembered for is being in the ring when Scott Hall made his debut on Nitro.
Yeah, Enos was never quite used to his full potential. After the match, Mean Gene Okerlund interviewed Hacksaw Jim Duggan about Hulk Hogan and the NWO. Of course, Duggan feels betrayed and referred to Hogan as a great technical wrestler. I don't know about that one, Hacksaw.
Hulkster, you're a great technical wrestler, but I don't want to wrestle you. I want to beat you up.
Mean Gene, of course, the Hall of Famer. He died on January 2nd, 2019. But Hulk Hogan, a great technical wrestler?
Man, when I heard that line, I was down at the park eating lunch, watching it, because I knew we were going to be covering it this week. And I heard that, and I almost choked on my Sonic hot dog because I'm like, what the world did he just say? Great technical wrestler? Are you freaking kidding me? After he made that statement, that whole interview lost all legitimacy and anything with me. I mean, I know the point was he was trying to say, hey, I want to fight you. I'm mad at you. We were friends. You did this and this. But Hulk Hogan, technical wrestler, I think not.
Well, he's saying an oddly placed Glacier vignette. Glacier, we also talked about this off the air. A couple of years too late to start this Mortal Kombat type gimmick.
Yeah, that's exactly what he was the Mortal Kombat gimmick. Of course, Glacier.
Finish him.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard such great things about Glacier. You know, hey, he's one of the nicest guys in the world. I think he still helps out Diamond Dallas Page with his accountability crib. Great guy. Always heard great things. But yeah, this gimmick, man, was 2 years too late. And it looks so crazy with some of the things we're going to talk about that happens on this show later. It makes it look cartoonish and completely out of place. And I don't know, maybe in the WWF in 96 it would have fit in, but it was something. I mean, that's an early 90s to mid 90s gimmick.
Second match of the night, Lex Luger, Macho Man Randy Savage, and Sting versus the Four Horsemen of Benoit, Ric Flair, and Mongo. Of course, Deborah, Elizabeth, and Woman were all out there as well. Ends in a double countout. You see Sting here with the dark hair. A few months later, he'll start his transition into his Crow gimmick. This match was chaotic from start to finish. We see the famous Flair flip. Jimmy Hart sprints out, screaming his head off to the cameraman to get back into the back because the Outsiders are back.
I almost nailed him. Home run pass.
Please take the camera to the back. We need help. The Outsiders in the back. Come on. We need somebody in the back, please.
What is he talking about? Need somebody? He's trying to get a cameraman.
Yeah, I mean, the match, it wasn't, I mean, it was just craziness. Macho Man flying all over the place, him and Flair. I really liked the combination when they had, Liz and Woman with Flair. I love that run he had in early 96 when he was the champ. And he would always have them come out, set up a big buffet line. He'd be sitting at the table with Woman and Liz. That tension between Savage, Flair even ran over and kissed Liz. Him and they were going at it, and then he just went over and kissed her. And that was an interesting, sloppy, slobbery kiss. It was a mess, just like this match. But then when Jimmy Hart comes in, you know, there was tension between Sting and Luger coming into this show because of his relationship with Jimmy Hart. So, you know, I was kind of wondering, well, what's up his sleeve? Well, we were about to find out.
Hart gets everybody's attention. They all run in the back. Match ends in a double countout. Sting in the Hall of Fame. Flair in the Hall of Fame. Savage in the Hall of Fame. Of course, he passed away in 2011. Elizabeth, she passed away in 2003, possibly with the help of Luger. Benoit and Woman, we all know their tragic story. They passed away in 2007. And Mongo, I'm just going to say it, he is one, if not the worst horseman ever. And I'm throwing Paul Roma in there too. I think Roma was probably a better wrestler. I know he was a better wrestler than Mongo, but possibly even a better horseman than Mongo.
I think if you're ranking the horsemen, to me, I definitely think Mongo is at the very tail end. I think Roma was a much better worker, but Mongo, he had just joined the horsemen. So the horsemen, you know, they had tricked Kevin Green. They got Mongo to join them. You know, he's got Deborah there. There's women everywhere. There's wrestlers everywhere. I really enjoyed this incarnation, but pretty much the only thing he could throw was elbows. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when they do a battle royal, it's pretty much elbow, elbow, elbow. Everyone's just throwing elbows on each other. And that's really all Mongo could really do at this time. And the way that it was funny, early in the match, they were building him up as, you know, this tough dude who's got great moves in the ring. And you could tell it was very elementary at that point.
There used to be an outstanding Twitter account. I don't know if it's still out there or not. It was called What Will Mongo Do Next? And it was full. Every tweet was of a Mongo botch, a video of Mongo doing something just totally absurd. It was great. In the back, Hall and Nash are standing over Buff Bagwell and Arn Anderson holding baseball bats. Scotty Riggs comes out. They attack him as well. Then Rey Mysterio comes flying off the trailer onto Nash. Nash catches him and then launches him head first into the side of the trailer like a dog.
That's Rey Mysterio. There's the Cruiserweight champion, Rey Mysterio. Oh, no! Oh, head first into the trailer in the back.
He threw him like he was a dart.
Man, the lawn dart heard around the world. I think everyone that's a wrestling fan remembers that moment when he just caught Mysterio, threw him in the side of the trailer. It was a fantastic move. You know, that's the part they really remember. But watching it back, I totally forgot that Scotty Riggs gets beat up. But Scotty comes running out, and he's all, Marcus, Marcus. And, you know, it's like, all right, there's two guys laying. There's two guys with bats. Let me step and go look at my friend and check on him. So while they take the bat and beat the crap out of me, poor Scotty Riggs, his career, you know, you can't say it recovered because honestly, it never really got started. But yeah, they did bring us that great American male theme song.
I wish they would have darted Scotty into the side of the trailer because, like you just said, him and Bagwell, as the American males, had the most annoying theme song in the history of this great
American males, American males, American males, American males, American males, American males, American males,
American males, American males.
Then a bunch of WCW guys came out. Hall and Nash jump into a limo to drive off, and the Macho Man jumps on top of the limo as it leaves the studios. And Bischoff has said this was not scripted. Savage improvised, jumped on the car on the fly on his own.
Risk management in Turner Broadcasting. Now, this is before they were sticking their nose in our business too much, but I can only imagine if I would have had a Turner Broadcasting suit, if this would have been 1998, they would have soaked me in gasoline and set me on fire for that move. I mean, Randy could have easily gotten killed doing that, but that was Randy. He just felt it in the moment, and it was cool as shit. I mean, that, it wasn't a stunt. There was nobody dressed up like Randy. It wasn't a, you know, we didn't edit it in such a way that, you know, Randy jumped up there and then we replaced it with a dummy that was dressed just like Randy and shot it from a distance. There was no TV gimmick going on there. That was just live, real shit, improv as it was happening. And it was awesome.
I mean, that made it more realistic to me. As an 18-year-old watching this all those years ago, when I saw Savage go and jump and he's hanging on for his life. And it looked legitimately like he was freaking hanging on for his life. I'm sure he jumped on and Nash was in there and Hall was in there. And they're like, what are you doing, Savage? And he's probably like, grab my hands and hold on to me, brother. I mean, it made it seem much more realistic. And I mean, this was the beginning. I mean, this whole segment, just the attack right there was something completely different. You got Savage jumping on cars. This was like nothing any other wrestling organization was doing at the time, and it was captivating.
Ray is saying there were four men involved instead of three. This was a small but important detail. The paramedics take off Ray's mask, which was the first time ever on TV. Of course, Ray covers his face up. Woman is going berserk. Arn, Buff, and Sting and Flair all get in the same ambulance and leave together. But you mentioned earlier Savage jumping on the limo was realistic. Them taking off Ray's mask was very realistic. And we'll see a little bit more of this throughout the show, but those small details like that really, really made this show.
Well, there was so many little nuggets that they put in here, which, you know, WCW was known for just throwing things together last second and being unorganized. But I almost think that they had a really good plan when it came to how this was going to be pulled off, because there was just so many great nuggets. Okay, Ray's mask is getting cut off, you know, and then they explained the importance of losing the mask. Eddie Guerrero did a fantastic job, kept saying, hey, there were four guys having that conversation. I thought everyone that was in the back end was contributing. You know, Chris Benoit had the look on his face like, you know, he was just absolutely devastated that his mentor, Double A, was attacked. You know, and it was funny when I was watching this, everyone is pulling off their role so believable, and then the camera turns over to Luger for a minute, and he flexes.
You got to get
he
that
flexes.
Flex there.
He's like, I know the camera's looking at me, so I'm gonna flex real good, and then kind of look at the camera to see what I look like. That was the only cartoon moment of that, but I mean, just a fantastic job. All these guys putting it together, plus pushing the storyline along. Hey, there's four now. There's not just three. There's four. And really pushing that point. I mean, I think the whole group pulled it off. They pulled it off so well. What I've heard on Bischoff's podcast, he actually said that Disney actually really contacted the fire department. The fire truck that comes flying in was actually not part of the script.
No, there were this all this craziness was done so well and so believable that there were people actually calling 911 because they thought something for real was going on.
I never would have anticipated that you could do something on a wrestling show that was so believable that people sitting at home would call the cops in the local market. But that's exactly what happened. And we got word right away from Disney management, you know, police are on their way. And I'm thinking, what do you mean the police are on their way? The fuck are they on their way for? And sure enough, we had an Orlando cop showing up on the set because people were, you know, people called 911. They thought there was a murder going on backstage because they'd never seen anything like it. It was so believable that, you know, it just didn't look like a wrestling angle.
And Disney called up and said, hey, we got help coming. The police are on the way. And he's like, what the hell for? And it was because this was all done so well.
Well, the fire truck that pulls in the back, from what Bischoff has said, that was a real fire truck that came flying in there. And you could see Doug Dillinger goes running over to probably tell him, hey, guys, this is just a work. But, I mean, it was so believable, and they did such a great job at pulling it off. I mean, you know, yeah, woman, she showed a lot of emotion. To me, it was kind of overkill because you got Deborah and Liz both just standing there, you know, trying to keep a straight face the whole time. And then you got woman who is just, you know, and out of those three, I always thought woman was a better manager than Liz. I thought she was a fantastic character that they had in WCW. I actually was really disappointed when she was no longer involved in the wrestling game because she was great working as a manager, but I think maybe just a fraction too much overselling for me.
I totally agree. Eric Bischoff joins Schiavone and Zbyszko on commentary for hour number two. Bobby Heenan comes out, refuses to join because he doesn't feel safe due to his past neck injuries.
Stop right now. Let me get something straight here right now, Eric. I'm not going to do a wrestling interview. I'm talking to you man-to-man, face-to-face. I have a history of neck injuries. You know that. You can get a shot of this. I have nerve damage in my hand. Eric, the job isn't worth it to me to be out here. They almost broke your back a couple weeks ago. You saw what just happened out back. There's bodies all over the place. I'm not going to do the broadcast tonight unless somebody can guarantee me security. Somebody can guarantee me that I physically won't be hurt. Can you do that?
Bobby, I can't guarantee you anything right now. You do what you feel you have to do.
Well, I have to walk away from this. My health and my well-being, I'm not going to be crippled and paralyzed for the rest of my life.
Look, I'm not going to argue with you here. I'm not going to argue with you, Bobby. You do what you have to do.
This is another minor detail that adds even more realism to the story.
Oh, I thought that was a great spot when the brain comes out. And he talks about his neck injury, which, you know, 6 months earlier, Pillman was grabbing the back of his neck and he was cussing on air. So, you know, a lot of people knew about his neck issues because it was brought up at the Clash. But, yeah, just another area, another part that brought a lot of realism to it. And I thought it was just absolutely fantastic. You know, I mean, the brain, you legitimately thought he was scared for his life. And then the tone, like you really listen to the tone of Bischoff's voice, the somberness. You know, Shivani was acting confused. He didn't even have to act. Shivani's always confused.
With that feathered
so,
hair.
Yeah, oh, yeah, and that sweet mullet that was just flowing in the wind over there. But, I mean, the announcing team, just their somber tone they came back with, they didn't oversell it, and I thought it was magic.
Again, Ray was scheduled to defend the Cruiserweight title against Eddie Guerrero. Steiners were supposed to wrestle the American males, and Arn Anderson was looking to face the Giant in a world title match. Now this has changed. So the Steiner brothers now face High Voltage, in which they defeated after Scott did a screwdriver suplex pile driver on Rage for the three count.
Oh, what a beautiful variation of a pile driver, and that's three.
And here are your winners as the crowd reacts. The Steiner brothers.
Rage obviously didn't care whether or not he got paralyzed, because this was a scary move and probably is not allowed these days, especially by someone like Scott Steiner.
Well, right before that match started, the subtle thing I really liked is they delayed in getting on the next match, because they're like, hey, this has changed the card. We got to come up with replacement matches. The crowd's chanting boring, boring. But they let it go on. They didn't panic. They said, hey, this is giving it even more a realistic feel to it. Then you have the Steiners come out. They're walking to the ring. They're constantly looking behind them. You know, they're looking all over the place like they're paranoid that someone's going to come out. Just little subtle things like that they did all through the show that was fantastic. Of course, the poor team of High Voltage comes out. And, I mean, these guys were jobbers basically for 4 years. I don't even know if I've ever seen High Voltage win a match. But you know when they came on that they were going down and someone was getting put over. But, yeah, dangerous move right there. But, you know, Scott Steiner's still moving around really good in the ring, still of an athletic feel. Of course, you know, before he got too pumped up, he was still moving very well at this time.
Yeah, like you said, Steiners were pretending to be distracted by what happened by the NWO earlier. When I was watching this, the first thought when the High Voltage came out, I thought my iPhone alarm was going off, because it's the exact sound of the start of their theme. They were jobbers, two products of the WCW power plant, lots of potential, but their wrestling career just never took off. Also, if you watch this, you'll hear some loud bangs during the match, and I'm pretty sure that was fireworks going off in the Disney park. And occasionally, if you catch a look in the background of some of the camera angles, you can see some of those fireworks going off.
Yeah, I mean, poor High Voltage, man. I mean, products of the power plant, which developed, of course, you know, Goldberg and a lot of others. But for some reason, these guys were never given a chance to get a couple wins. They were just constantly used as jobbers. And you look at them, great builds, great physiques. I don't think I ever heard them cut a promo or talk the whole time they were on WCW. Why not put this group with a manager?
Yeah.
You know, maybe stick them with like Colonel Parker or someone like that, his Jump Rope Academy. You know, get Colonel Parker in there with them, or some type of manager. Some type of mouthpiece is what they needed, because they had the look. And, you know, a team like that today, they would be over.
You guys will have to Google what he said, too, if you caught it. Fourth match of the night, Eddie Guerrero defeated Big Bubba Rogers with Jimmy Hart by pinfall with a sunset flip.
Eddie Guerrero comes up. Bubba loses the phone, and the referee's in position. And Eddie gets it. Guerrero wins the match.
Both these guys are great. Both are talented. Both are in the WWE Hall of Fame and both no longer with us. This wasn't a great match, to be honest, but it did showcase how Eddie can hang with the big guys.
Yeah, you know, watching this match, I'm like, okay, he's Big Bubba this week. I think he was the Guardian Angel the week before. Then I think he's going to be Ray Traylor in a couple weeks. Why could WCW not find something? I mean, this is one of the greatest workers all the time. I mean, and you know, in a year or a year and a half later, he's back in WWF during the Attitude Era, playing a major character of the corporate. When he comes out, there's huge pops for the guy.
Like you said, man, NWA used him great as Big Bubba Rogers. WWF used him great as the Big Boss Man. For whatever reason, WCW just couldn't figure out what to do with Ray Traylor. and how what a talented guy he was.
I mean, he was a guy that, I mean, these are two guys, when you talk about big men, he, like what Eddie Guerrero is to the cruiserweights, I think, you know, Big Bubba Rogers, Big Boss Man, I think he was for the heavyweights because he could move.
Yeah.
He was nimble. He could work a match. He had some fantastic matches, of course, in the late 80s with Hogan. But, you know, and a quick tidbit, too, he was in the main event of the very first Monday Nitro. He was one of, you know, Hogan loved working with him. They all liked working with him because it was almost like a night off with him. But why, I mean, just a lack of creative, you know, it just brought back some of the, man, what could have been if someone just could have booked him right.
We then see our very first ever black and white NWO vignette. History-making moment, a group that changed the landscape of pro wrestling.
The following announcement has been paid for by the New World Order.
The following announcement. Oh, I mean, every time you would hear that, you know, the following announcement is paid for by the New World Order. I mean, those are classic. And the black and white that they put in with it, you know, from what I've read and what I've heard, Hall and Nash really drove the creativity. I guess they got together and like, we got to shoot some promos. So Hogan goes in his 1980s, you know, let me tell you, brother, you know, all his stuff that he's doing. And I think they pretty much kind of just let him do what he wanted to do. But then after he left the shoot, from what I've heard, Hall and Nash, you know, they did their segments, of course, and they kind of cut down what Hogan did. And it was absolutely, it was a perfect promo. It was a perfect way to set up. I mean, everything during this first few months of the NWO was absolutely perfect per inning.
And our main event of the night, originally supposed to be Double A, the Enforcer Arn Anderson versus the Giant. We get the Giant with Jimmy Hart versus Greg the Hammer Valentine. He wins by pinfall after chokeslamming the absolute hell out of Greg the Hammer Valentine a few times to retain the world title.
One, two, nobody gets up from a chokeslam. And they are standing and cheering because they're cheering not only for the world champion, but for World Championship Wrestling.
This match lasted less than 2 minutes. With all due respect to the Hammer, he probably wasn't the best choice as a substitute for this match.
Well, I think they played in, hey, we got to find someone because the main event with Double A just got absolutely destroyed. We got to find someone quick. And, you know, so let's bring in Greg the Hammer Valentine. Hey, he's a big name, former Intercontinental Champion, former Tag Team Champion in the WWF, won a lot of championships also in the NWA. Great name for him to come in and put over. I mean, it was kind of awkward, though. It felt really out of place because you almost forget that Valentine was even in WCW in the 90s. But, I mean, it was all about putting the Giant over as the champ.
I don't know how old Valentine was during this match, but, you know, those had to hurt taking those bumps. He did what he was supposed to do. The Giant gets over. He takes a choke slam off the middle rope, and then he takes another one in the middle of the ring. Brutus's roommate was probably very sore the next morning. Of course, the Giant went on to become the Big Show, and I believe Valentine is helping our friends down in Texas out in the SWE.
Yeah, Valentine, I mean, he's still contributing. You know, the main event, it was what it was. It was supposed to put the Giant over. That's exactly what it did. The Giant's still very green at this time, but I loved his athleticism. I love the things that he could do. I mean, in this run with the belt in early 96 to mid 96, I mean, he was built up as, you know, basically like another Andre. But if you really think about it, this was kind of the beginning of the end of the Giant. He would go on to lose the belt in a couple weeks at Hog Wild, and then he never really recovered. He became a lackey in the NWO. Then, you know, he's hanging out with Luger all the time, and he never really found his way again after this initial championship run.
He had about a million heel face turns after this, too.
Yeah, exactly.
After the match, Mean Gene interviewed the Giant and Jimmy Hart in the ring. Giant does a corny Hogan impression and then said he had a choke slam with Hogan's name on
Hogan,
it.
I've got a choke slam noose that's going to fit just right around your neck.
that's how the show ends. I think there's at least 14 WWE Hall of Famers on this episode, and of course, 8 of these people are no longer with us. Again, one of the most memorable episodes in WCW Nitro history. It beat the WWE Monday Night Raw in ratings this night with a 3.0, and again, only in front of 450 people in attendance.
Well, I mean, it is a fantastic show, and it's not fantastic because of the wrestling. It's fantastic exactly because of that whole segment, that backstage segment. The interview at the end, hey, show never a fantastic promo, especially when he was hollering and screaming. Especially that first year, it seemed like he spit on himself a lot. So I think he kind of learned, of course, hey, now he's a sitcom star. Great talent, been in a ton of movies, but he was just so green and so new to the business at that time. I'm just glad he was still alive after falling off of the top of Cobo Hall in October the year before.
Well, guys, that about wraps it up. Thank you for listening. Thanks for always giving us good input. Follow us on Facebook at The Slop Drop, on Twitter at The Slop Drop 1. Wherever there's a podcast, we are there. Leave us a good rating and a good review. Doesn't cost you a penny, but it helps us a lot. And until next time, we're out of here.
Oh, yeah.
Goodbye and good night.
One, two, three.